Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help. You save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
Wait a minute, what am I doing? Two men in a one. Two friends from film school, one who graduated, one who didn't, and they decided to make a podcast. Okay, this has never been done before, right? Okay. This is Matthew and Harrison's Two Men in a Movie. It's not what it sounds like.
But like with the Mothman, like, events, like, people are like, oh, the Mothman's an omen of, like, terror and fear and a harbinger of doom, but he's really not. Because, like, he shows up, he chases some cars, and then he's gone. He doesn't, like, do anything. He's very small. What he is a part of is the UFO flap of the time, where, like, there's a bunch of paranormal sightings going on, which included the Men in Black, not the Will Smith Men in Black, but the traditional Men in Black. And they were really, more than anything, the ones who were, like, talking about, like, something bad's gonna happen, something bad's gonna happen, and then the bridge clap. Mothman has very little to do with the actual bridge clap. Are we recording?
Yes.
Two Men in a Movie Podcast. Welcome to Two Men in a Movie Podcast, where each week, two men watch a movie one of us can't believe the other hasn't seen. I, as always, Mothman enthusiast Matthew Olenchek, here with the always handsome, beautiful boy, Harrison Poole.
Hey babe, how you doing?
I'm doing great, you know me.
Love to see it. So do you want to introduce the movie or do you want me to?
I can introduce. So this is a movie that I have seen before, but it's been a while, but it's, like, stuck with me.
Sure.
It's Time Bandits. It's a Terry Gilliam film.
Yes.
And it was, like, a movie, because my mom, when I was a youngin', back in the day when you got Netflix through the mailbox.
Sure.
She got, like, the DVD and we watched it, because that's the kind of woman my mother is. That's the kind of, watch a lot of weird things because of her. It shaped me as a person.
Hell yeah. That's awesome.
And I just thought that it'd be a fun movie to watch, because I remember it being wild, and turns out it's even more bonkers than I remember. Like, both from, like, a story perspective and a choice in making the film perspective. There are some interesting choices I think they make. Like, choosing when to stop the camera from rolling.
Yeah. I'm gonna get into this right away. This is probably my biggest fault with this movie. And it's, I don't know if it's the movie or the fact that I watched it twice today. It's too long.
It's very long.
It's good. I enjoy it. I had a grand old time.
It really is a lesson in sometimes you should cut things that are good.
Yes. Yes. It is a lesson in Kill Your Darlings. It's not even, it's under 2 hours. It's 155. And I feel like it would make a perfect 140.
I will say, I feel like you're being a little hard on this movie.
Yeah.
I think it's because of your Protestant upbringing versus what I would describe as the perfect Catholic movie. Hey, Matthew Olenchek here, former Catholic. This is the perfect Catholic movie. I think that the Pope probably loves this movie.
Sure.
Francis loves this movie.
Sure.
And I think that if they had this, they should play this at church every Mass. I think it's a very good showing of, like, Catholic theology.
Sure.
And like, people are like, oh, why? Because, like, a while ago, my friend was on Tinder, not me, for once. And he was, it's like, this person's looking for a God-loving man. And I said, well, it couldn't be me. I'm a God-fearing man. And they're like, why do you say that? And it's because the Catholic God is the God of this movie. Brutally uncaring and, like, pretty much as a stodgy old British man. We lost, like, two followers, two listeners. We don't have a big listener base, I'm imagining, but, like, those two hardline Catholics just left.
Listen, I don't know. I'm not a Catholic, as you mentioned. I am vaguely Protestant.
Heretic.
Sure. I have been to Catholic Mass a few times.
Much better.
Sure.
Much better, isn't it?
I've taken communion. I've been an altar boy for one mass.
Actual communion, where it's actually the blood and body of Christ, not make pretend, like Martin Luther wants it to be.
Sure, sure. I was not confirmed, but I've had communion. I was an altar boy for one mass. I was involved a little bit in Catholicism in a past life.
The only good Christianity.
Jesus Christ. Okay. Anyway.
I'm not counting Orthodox as Christians, by the way, just so everyone's aware.
So this is, okay. This is not...
Grab your notes, producer boy.
Okay. So this...
And let's start talking about a two-hour movie. It's we didn't even touch the summary at all. It involves God, a bunch of, like, dwarves. And I'm not, like, using dwarves as in, like, an antiquated term for little people. They're literal, like, mythological dwarves.
Yeah.
Played by little people.
Sure.
And they built the universe. They built trees. And then they built this big bad tree, and God made them do repairs with a map of holes in the universe. And they stole the map, and they're like, we're gonna steal things. And that's how I don't understand, because they're like angels or something. I don't know what use they have for like man's gold. It's a weird plan. But along the way, they abduct like the most stereotypical British boy, who's like, cheerio, Randall, blimey. And that's like him the entire movie. And his parents love toasters. And then they just kind of meander around the plot for a while until it's not the plot anymore and the movie's done.
Yeah, this movie this movie does open with essentially like an ad for new kitchen system. Is it called Moderna? I think it's called...
That sounds right.
I think it's called Moderna. It opens on a TV ad for a new kitchen system, and it's... A stereotypical nuclear family missing 1.5 kids.
Also, like, very stereotypical British, because the woman's like, oh, do they have names? I'm sure they say their names. I don't know the parents' names. It's like, oh, Samuel, that would make my job so much easier. And he's like, blimey, that's quite the machine there. And the kid's like, did you know the Romans? Do you know the Romans used to do stuff like this? They're like, shut up, boy, go to bed.
I'm basically, yeah, and then when he does...
Look, I'm not exaggerating. No. That's what they sound like.
Yeah.
Everyone else in the movie sounds normal, so it has to be an intentional choice that, like, we're going to make them sound like the like, British people think these people sound British.
When he does go to bed, is that the night burst through his wardrobe?
Yeah, a night burst through his, it, like, breaks his light and goes through his wall, which is then a forest...
Yeah.
And then he goes and he hides under his covers. He comes back up and the wall's a wall again. And then his dad comes and he's like, What's all this noise then? What's all this noise? Stop it! It's going to be the entire podcast. I'm sorry.
I really hope you stop relatively soon.
I mean, eventually it'll just be me doing the boy impression, so it'll get mildly better.
Sure, sure, sure. And then he... The little boy's name is Kevin, which is a great name.
Yeah, I feel like it should be more British, like William.
So the next day happens, and the boy is very obsessed with going to bed in a way that no little boy has ever been. That truly should have set off some suspicions.
Yeah, and he sneaks up the thing, the stairs, I believe they're called. And he does, like, this thing that they do with, like, sneaky little kids that I absolutely hate, which is he sticks his tongue out, like... That works for an audio medium. But he sticks his tongue out like this.
Sure, sure,
and it's, like, a weird thing that they have sneaky, mischievous children do. I don't understand it.
No, but the dad's very obsessed with, like, you need to eat your dinner, young man. And then, I don't know if he does or not, it cuts away. And then he's like, you know, my dinner's settled. Can I go to bed? Truly should have set off so many alarms.
And he goes, no noise!
Like, the boy was not being subtle in any way.
No.
No. So he goes to bed, and he carries a camera and a flashlight with him. And he's trying to take a picture of the thing.
Yeah, like, of the night, I think. Which is it's brave to assume it'll happen again.
That, but also, yeah, you having a picture is cool, but what's that gonna do from like stopping it from happening?
I don't think he cares about that.
Oh, he just wants to know that he's not crazy.
I just think he wants a picture of a cool night.
Okay. How old is Kevin?
8? I don't know.
Okay, yeah, it's not mentioned.
I can't tell how old anybody is.
Okay.
If they're, like, under the age. If they're not, like, actually drinking alcohol and a cop's giving them a thumbs up saying, yeah, it's legal for you to do that. Like, if they're younger than that, I cannot tell.
Sure. Okay. But he goes to bed again and he falls asleep at his post like a fucking amateur.
Yeah.
And then when he's asleep, the time bandits, the titular time bandits,
the credits roll.
Exactly. Burst through the wardrobe and is like, is that him? We went through the time hole.
Yeah. They're like, well, where are we? I don't know.
Yeah.
Where are we? This is how all British people sound to me. And they're like,
I think that's him. Actually, no, it's not. It doesn't.
Yeah, they think it's him when he turns on the flashlight.
Yeah.
Because they're like, oh, no, it's him. And then it's not. They're like, that's just a boy. And then they beat the shit out of him.
Or they try, at least. They do fucking dogpile on him. And Kevin's just like, yo, what is going on? And this is the real world. And then they push his wall and it starts moving.
Yeah.
And it's never done that before.
He's like, blimey, it's never done that before.
And so their wall is another time hole. And then the Supreme
Being... No other time hole works like this, by the way. No. It's never happens again.
No. The Supreme Being is like, yo, I'm here.
Give me back what you've taken.
Very much in a Wizard of Oz-esque look. He's just a floating head in mist.
Yeah, and he's like, return what you have stolen. And they're like, oh, God.
And so he just... totally could have caught up, but
yeah, slowly advances as a giant wizard head going, give me back the map.
And then the bandits are just like, yo, we're gonna keep pushing because that's how
and,
this works.
Yeah, then it stops being a tunnel and now it's a void, and they fall into the void, and then they fall into France.
Yeah, Napoleon times, but they say the exact year, something like 1796. Yeah,
something like that.
And they meet Napoleon.
Well, before that, we find out who the being is, because they're like, blimey, who is that then? And they're like, well, Kevin.
He's God. He's the allegory for God.
That's a supreme being. And they're like, God? And he's like, we just worked for him.
Yeah. Yeah, so... I get what... Never mind.
No, you say your point.
I get what Terry Gilliam's trying to do. I don't know if the metaphor fully tracks. I don't know. Anyway,
that makes sense to me as a calf. Like, everything in this movie makes a lot of sense.
Okay.
I was taught this in Bible school, actually.
This movie is so about God, yet so not about God.
Yeah, Catholicism.
I was never raised Catholic. I think I said that like 4 times already. I was never raised Catholic, but like, I don't know. There are things like that where I think I would like, I would know, I would get certain parts of this more. I was raised non-denominational. I went to a church school for 15 years. I'm pretty sure I've said this on the pod.
Non-denominational.
If not, you'll find out within an hour of meeting me. I bring it up a lot. Actually, outside of this podcast and truly outside of you, there are friends who have banned me from bringing up the subject.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Because I talk about it too often. Anyway.
No one wants to hear about non-denominationals. Choose a side.
It's not even. Anyway, I want to go to seminary. Not the point. I threatened to quit my job and join seminary to my manager twice a week.
Yeah.
Yeah, I threatened to become an Episcopalian priest.
Jesus. What? Whoop. Episcopalian?
Anyway.
Oh, man.
The fucking high and mighty of you goddamn Catholics.
We're God's chosen, what can I say?
Okay. The Jews.
Sorry,
are God's
Jews.
I was going to say the Jews are God's chosen one.
Sorry, Jews. You lost this battle.
So they meet Napoleon, and Napoleon
loves puppets. So I immediately identify with this guy.
Yeah, he's like admiring this guy, this like puppet show, and then the puppet show, the puppeteer is shot.
Yeah. Do you know who shot him?
No.
Who? Okay, neither did I. Okay. I wasn't sure if it's maybe something you picked up on.
No, I just thought it was war. I've seen this movie twice today.
Yeah, that's why I assumed you knew who shot him. No, he's just shot.
It's just war. It comes out of nowhere.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Mystery solved.
And Napoleon is very unhappy. And so the theater troupe is like, we have other things.
And he hates all of them.
All of them, except for what he likes about the puppets is that they were beating each other up.
Yeah. And that they were small.
Yes. And then the bandits come in and start doing a little song and dance. They're making up on the spot. And then they get mad and it turns into a brawl within each other. And Napoleon wasn't a fan of the song and dance, but he
loves watching them beat the shit out of each other.
He loved.
And he makes them all generals?
Yeah. He fires his old team of generals and then makes them generals.
Man conquered half of Europe.
Oh, he's also very obsessed with people's heights, yeah. Which I get the joke. He mentioned Cyrano de Bergerac, which I'm afraid to sound stupid here. I understand the play Cyrano de Bergerac. That's a play. That's not a real person, right?
Mm.
Okay, cool.
I always do my research. He is this. He's real. And he's 5'1".
Cyrano was 5'3", according to the thingamabob.
Yeah, I don't think Alexander was 5 foot. I think that's all fake.
Sure.
But he just like lists a bunch of people's like heights while he's getting drunk, and then he passes out, and they rob him fucking blind.
Yeah, they steal all his valuables, and then the old generals are like chasing after him. Well, first they just walk past the old generals, like yeah. Tally ho. Good
tally ho, sir. But it's more like Oh, daily, huh?
And the old generals.
Salut!
The old generals Salut. Were chill with it.
Yeah, because they all turned their backs because they're like, oh, attention!
And then they
I'm
find
really
out.
Good at accents. I'm really good at this.
And they find out what was going on and they start running after. And they run into another time hole.
Which, unlike the first time hole, is like.
It's just like a square, like...
Like a Star Trek-esque, yeah, like...
Like a door.
Edge of Tomorrow door. Yes.
Yeah. It's truly, it's like they in After Effects, they did a mask and then just had, like, a fuzzy galaxy.
Yeah.
In the background.
And they fall through this into...
The Middle Ages.
The Middle Ages.
They drop into... Michael Palin and Shelley Duvall.
Sarah Palin's father, fun fact.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. Michael Palin and Shelley Duvall.
She may have built a road to nowhere, but he built a road to a long career success.
So the two of them are fake Romeo and Juliet, and they're so horny for each other. Pansy, and I forget his name. Vincent. I don't know if his name is Vincent in Middle Ages, but it is on the Titanic. Yeah, we'll get to that later.
The name's Pansy on the Titanic, so one could assume.
That his name is Vincent. Yeah. So they're a rich couple, and Vincent has erectile dysfunction or something.
And he needs fruit for it?
Yeah. I'm not sure
it's ED because when they're tied up, he's like, the problem. And it'd be really weird if he's tied up and he's like, I'm not hard. The problem. I need fruit.
Fun fact. I was looking it up while we were watching the movie and it doesn't, there's no, like, it's not anything real. Truly. Yeah. It's that whatever we think of is funnier than anything he could have written.
Yeah, and it's got to be a shitting problem or something, in my opinion.
Sure.
Because there's no reason if he had erectile dysfunction, he would call it out while being tied up. Unless like being tied up makes him instantly hard.
Yeah, no, I thought that's what it was. I thought that.
You thought he was like, I'm not hard, she'll get me fruit. Why does it need to be hard in that?
I thought it was a fear-based erectile dysfunction.
Oh.
Yeah, that he has to be afraid to be hard.
Oh, I see. So you're saying he was hard in that scene.
Yes. And then the fruit is a metaphor for, like, metaphor. Is like the allegory for, like, pineapple and blah, blah, blah.
I think
that's the joke.
I think you're reaching for that part.
In my head, that's the joke. Where he's like, I need fruit. In my head, it's a scurvy joke. And two.
It's a scurvy joke?
Yes.
Why is it a scurvy joke?
Why else would he need
fruit? He's not on a boat.
Okay. It's old English. People get scurvy all the
time. Yeah, but it wasn't.
People get scurvy today in the U.S.
Yeah, but it was like scurvy's mostly a sailor issue because of the lack of fresh fruit.
Exactly.
He's in a forest.
That's why he needs fruit. He has pineapple-based, fear-based.
They don't have pineapples yet.
Exactly.
What do you mean exactly? They haven't discovered the pineapple yet.
But so, okay. So they drop in on the carriage while they're all horned up. Nothing's going on other than they're flirting, but they're all horned up.
Everyone's horned up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so they drop into the carriage and just destroy everything. And Michael Palin and Shelley Duvall run away and are captured by another band of robbers.
Yeah.
Completely separate.
Not time bandits, regular bandits.
Right.
But this is where Kevin finds out that this is their first robbery they've ever done.
Yes.
And we learn their torrid backstory, of which they built trees, and then they made a stinky tree, and God hated it so much he made them repair holes in the universe because it was a rush job, because they made it in 7 days. And they said, we got no recognition or money, we're going to go through the holes and steal things and become the titular time bandits.
Yeah, that is what happens. Thank you.
I've seen the movie.
Yeah. You did. I would fucking hope so. You kept pausing it so many goddamn times. I would hope you were watching.
I have a short attention span.
I'm aware. So the bandits then get captured. And the other robbers are like, you robbers, you like Robin?
And he's like, yeah.
Randall's the leader.
The leader, yeah. But no, there's no leaders, they say, but he is the leader.
But they do what he says.
Yeah.
And yeah, he's like, yeah, I steal candy from babies and I enjoy it. And I love Robin. It's the goddamn best. I get so hard for Robin, you know?
Nothing I like more than Robin. And they go, all right, we'll let you down.
And so they take them to their camp, which is Robin Hood, is the Robin Hood camp.
Played by John Cleese.
Yes, correct.
I've seen this movie.
Sorry, I need to either not have interjections or get a better one that doesn't sound so condescending. I'm so sorry. But yeah, Robin Hood, they show the loot to Robin Hood and he's like, thank you for giving this to me. Well, first he's like, that's a lot of loot. Holy shit. And they're like, it was a good day. And he was like, yeah, I bet, dude.
And he's also like super prim and proper as opposed to all the rest of his bandits, which are like covered head to toe in scars and are murderous psychopaths.
And then he just like, he assumes that they're giving him the gold so that he can give to the poor and they aren't. But he fucking takes it. They just let him take it?
Yeah. Well, it's their first time robbing.
Yeah, so.
I don't mean to like sound condescending to you, Harrison, but they're not actually bandits.
But they are. They're going to be, is the thing.
Yeah, but not at this point in time. So they're not. They haven't yet got to that point of bandit school where they teach you that you can tell people no when they try to steal your loot back.
Yes.
Or maybe bandits are just allowed to steal from other bandits without punishment. You ever think about that? Maybe there's like a bandits code we're unaware of, we're unprivy of, because we're law-abiding citizens.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't... Is there... Listen, if any of our listeners
are bandits or a member of an FBI profiling team, please email us at twomenmoviepodcast @gmail.com and let us know. Is there a secret bandits code we're unaware of?
I actually hope we get... First off, I just hope someone emails us in general. But yeah. I would love to get a real answer. So every time Robin Hood gives a piece of gold to his poor constituents, one of the bandits who just speaks complete gibberish and then another bandit has to translate.
And it's like he's saying like things clear as day.
Yeah.
Like it's not like he's like...
It's a Han Chewie thing.
Yeah, it's really good.
The gibberish bandit just fucking socks people in the jaw.
Like, it's something I like about this movie is there's just a ton of small dumb jokes like that that like aren't drawn too much attention to, and they just happen and then you never see them again.
Yes, this movie very much feels, I mean, it makes total sense because it's Terry Gilliam and then stars half the most, if not all, I don't know all the Monty Python cast off the top of my head, but like stars the Monty Python people. This very much feels like an extension of the Monty Python universe while technically being its own thing.
Its own thing, yeah.
Yeah. It definitely feels like it's of the mind of the people, but not like all, like they didn't all get together and decide like this is the thing we want to
do. Yeah, it's not going to be part of our brand.
No, which is weird. Fucking... Do you know George Harrison was the one of the primary producers? Like, the Beatle George Harrison was one of the primary producers of this movie?
We would have been better if it was produced by Ringo Starr, I tell you that much.
Yeah?
Yeah, have you seen his MS paintings?
No.
You haven't seen Ringo Starr's Microsoft Paint paintings?
I don't think so. No, you show me at the end of the podcast.
Just keep talking. Please. Just keep talking.
Okay. Yeah. Mini tangent. One of these days we're going to get an actual researcher instead of just me doing Google shit. George Harrison was Handmade Film, like, is the co-creator of Handmade Films, who was the primary production company of this.
It makes sense. Like, I know, like, Monty Python and the Holy Grail was, like, produced and paid for by, like, the Beatles and, like, I think the Rolling Stones as well.
Yeah. Life of Brian was the first movie of Handmade Films. Like, it was the first movie of the production company. You're showing me
Ringo. That's one of Ringo Starr's Microsoft Paint.
Hell yeah, dude. Yeah, he's great.
Note to self, make thumbnail for this episode.
Just
a picture of Ringo Starr with one of his paintings.
Okay.
That one's fun.
Yeah.
You can buy it for $4,000.
What? No. No way. Yeah. No.
Yeah.
You know what? If you're willing to pay for MS Paint, go for it. Then Robin Hood lets him go. And that's where we're introduced to. They're like through the, it's the cauldron, not cauldron, but like the cauldron portal.
Yeah, it's a cauldron.
That like
it's a scrying cauldron.
Yeah, and it's essentially like, yeah, alien wizards who are evil, the devil himself. I think it's just
I don't think they're aliens. I think they're biblical figures.
They're dressed,
they're demons.
They're dressed like aliens because of technology.
Well, no, because they have the coverings on them, like all the furniture has the coverings of. Cause like in the parents' home, all that furniture was covered too.
Yeah.
And they're just covered like their furniture.
Sure.
But they're, what do you mean, sure?
No, I was following, sure.
You're like, sure.
That. Oh my God, I need more.
It's the tone, sure.
I didn't mean it like
but
that.
But yeah, it's the supreme evil who loves technology and hates God because God likes slugs and not lasers.
Yeah.
Which is canonical, that is in the Book of Enoch.
Every time, listen, so much of this movie, you could cut 15 minutes out of this movie at least easy.
You could cut a half an hour to 45 minutes out of this movie.
I'm going to be generous and say 15.
This movie could be an hour and 15 minutes.
Honestly, maybe. I would not cut any of Evil's lines.
No, Evil, the guy who plays Evil.
Oh my God. The first like real line that hit me was like, if I were God, I would have created lasers first day 8 a.m.
Yeah. Tell me about computers. No, he acts perfectly. All his acting is spot on. All his lines are delivered with perfect accuracy. He's incredible.
Oh my God. Tony J is the actor. I looked it up. Also plays the villain in Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Oh.
Yeah.
Like voices?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, and he's the narrator in, do you have Nausicaa? You have other Ghiblis. He's the narrator in Nausicaa.
Oh.
Yeah.
No, he's great. And there's not enough of him in the movie.
No, I agree. But also, any more of him, one, the movie would just feel longer than it already is.
You could cut out the entire Titanic scene, replace it with Evil. What is accomplished in the Titanic scene? Besides the ending of it, that you could put it in another scene.
Also, like, no one from the Titanic shows up at the end in the end battle.
There's a lot in this movie that has very little bearing on the plot, and not like in a, which is like it's fun to watch, but it's just like it'd be better if it, like I don't know. You just cut down the shot lengths even.
Oh, my God. And, yeah, that's a Terry Gilliam thing in general.
Like, as the movie goes on, like, every scene becomes more and more needlessly long.
Yeah. What is your experience with Gilliam? Just curious.
I mean, I experimented a bit with him in college, okay, but then, like... Off.
How? What movies have you seen?
For certain?
Yeah.
Time Bandits.
Okay. I love the Fisher King so much. Fisher King rules.
What has not made?
Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
I've seen Monty Python and the Holy Grail. I saw the Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus.
I have not seen that, actually.
Wait, no, I haven't. Oh. What's the one where it's...
Mr. Megorium's Wonder Emporium?
Yeah, with the shoes. I've seen that one.
Okay. I think I've seen Brothers Grimm. I think. Anyway.
He did Jupiter Ascending?
No, he probably produced it. The Wachowskis did Jupiter Ascending.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, that was their, like, we get a blank check to do just whatever we want.
And so we made something bad.
Sure. They made something that was just complete id, and I really enjoyed it. It's not...
Isn't there, like, a werewolf man?
I don't remember a lot of that movie. I blocked out a lot of that movie, but what I do remember, I did enjoy.
I blocked out all the bad stuff, so I remember it being good.
Honestly, that's what I did with the last Matrix movie anyway. Not the fourth one. I've not seen number four. I'm talking Revelations.
The last one. Not the last one. The one they made like 10 years ago.
Anyway. Oh my God.
No longer than 10 years ago, because that came out before I started college.
Oh shit. Yeah, so evil is, he wants to use technology to kill God, essentially. That's an oversimplification.
Yeah, I think he wants to kill God so he can use technology.
But he says that, like, God doesn't understand technology.
Yeah, but I was saying that was him making his moral argument to why God shouldn't be God, because God doesn't play RuneScape.
Okay, that's truly, I took it more as, God doesn't understand this, so that's going to be my weapon situations. But no, I don't know. You're probably right. I don't know. But they find out that the bandits have the map, and evil controls Wally, or one of the bandits. I think it's Wally.
Is it Wally?
I don't.
Was it Og?
It might. I don't know.
He mind controls. He says, prepare for mind control.
I'm so happy that they keep... Listen, I normally get very annoyed when people say each other's names in movies all the time, because very rarely does that happen, like, in real life. But I'm so happy...
I know what you mean, Harrison. That never really happens.
I'm so happy that they did it in this.
Good point, Harrison.
Thanks. I'm so happy...
Thanks.
Thanks, Matthew. I'm very happy that they did it in this, because, like, I forgot their names immediately the first time.
Yeah.
Because they did, like, eight names in 10 seconds.
They all travel in, like, a swarm.
Yes.
Too. They're rarely separate enough for you to distinguish them as, like, individuals and not just the Time Bandits.
Right. I knew Strutter was...
It's Randall's the only one that really splits off from the group ever.
Yeah, Randall's the leader. Strutter's the old one. Is Og the one that eats the rat? Og is the one that turns into the pig.
Og turns into the pig. Vermin eats things.
Vermin, that's right. Vermin does, because his fucking name is Vermin. Duh, Harrison, you're so dumb.
And now the question is, did they name him Vermin because he ate things, or does he eat things because he was named Vermin?
I believe he was named Vermin and he ate things.
So the name decided his fate.
Yeah, oh, I mean, at least in the screenplay it did, absolutely. I don't know what the in-universe explanation is. So well,
I was named Matthew, and that's why I'm a gift from God.
Okay, nice. Yeah. Evil is communicating with the gang, the bandits.
He activated his mind control. He prepared for mind control, and then he waved his fingers at a magical pot, and now he's speaking through the Time Bandit.
Yes, and then, I didn't write down any of what he actually said. He just said that he controls them.
He's like, I have a plan. We should get the greatest thing in the universe.
You're
the thing that all people crave. And he's like, it's working. And then the little boy's like, what? Why is it always gotta be money with you fellas? Blimey.
Yes, and so there two holes open up, and that two time holes open up, and Randall is like, you can't...
Yeah, because God shows back up. He's like, give me the map.
Yeah.
give me the map.
And two of the time poles open up.
And he's like, which one do I use there? Like, this is what he sounds like. Like, the kid's a fine child actor. I don't hate the character, but his voice is so fucking high.
Yeah, he's
and he is like so nine. British.
He's probably British in real life. He's nine and British.
And the whole movie is like, Randall, that ain't the thing to do at In-N-In. Blimey, what a sticky wicket we're in right now, aren't we? Blimey, there's the Catholic God and he wants our map.
Kevin is like, yo, which one is the correct? And Randall's like, they're both correct. And then Kevin runs through one and Randall's like, not that one.
A classic bit.
Oh, absolutely. And it drops in Gladiator times with King Agamemnon fighting.
Not Gladiator times.
Yeah, it's Gladiator times.
That's Rome.
I know. I know.
With honestly, if the Minotaur's around,
listen,
that means that we're dealing with like Minos and Crete. So we're like Bronze Age.
Listen,
we
Einstein was a fraud. Time doesn't exist.
When you think Greeks, you're usually thinking exist. Like Athens and Spartan times, which is like hundreds of years after this. Like, we are brought before Bronze Age collapse Greece.
Listen, I wrote Gladiator times and I'm fucking sticking with it. I know I'm wrong, but time doesn't exist, so I don't have to.
But then you're ignoring the really interesting thing of like, when you get to the bronze clap, what caused that? Who are the sea people? There's a lot of interesting things in that time period.
But aren't explored in this movie. I'm sure in like the, yeah.
I like to think that evil caused the Bronze Age collapse.
I would not, in a little deleted scene, I'm sure there are none, but like in a deleted scene.
They cut nothing out.
Or a short film, I would love to see evil in Bronze, like I would love to see that explored more. But yeah, he drops in the middle of, in Greece, and Sean Connery is fucking fighting a Minotaur.
Like the worst looking Minotaur you've ever seen.
Genuinely, when I saw
it. B-movie Minotaur.
When I saw it the first time and it was papier-mâché and they fucking kept it in as papier-mâché, I assumed that it was like a helmet-y thing and he was pretend, like it was
he
like.
He was merely pretending to be the Minotaur.
Yes, but then. But then they don't break kayfabe and like
he's in fact the real
he's
Minotaur.
A real Minotaur. Listen, I didn't see all of season three of Twin Peaks, but I've seen scenes and it's very much it's the Lynchian thing of like the effects is just enough so that you get what I mean. I'm not actually gonna spend real money on this,
and I love it because like it's bad enough that you give birth to like a bull-headed child. But imagine you give birth to a bull-headed child and the bull's head is made out of papier-mâché.
Do you think in the universe it looks like papier-mâché?
I'm not saying, I don't think in the universe you look at it and you think that's papier-mâché, but I think exactly as we've seen it is how everyone in universe sees it, yes.
Okay. I can get behind that. Yeah, that makes sense. But yeah, Sean...
Honestly, terrifying monster. If a monster attacks you and it looks like... It's made out of papier-mâché, but that's just its flesh. That's scary, baby.
But would it be if you don't have a concept of what papier-mâché is?
They had papier-mâché. It was the Bronze Age collapse, not the Arts and Crafts collapse. You telling me fucking Achilles never made a little piece of macaroni art? Calling you a liar if you say so. Tell you that much.
So Sean Connery kills the Minotaur.
Cassandra, what is your new prophecy we won't believe? Well, here I've portrayed it with Plato. I made a Plato diorama that will tell you about the Trojan War.
See, these are the types of movies that really just showcase how stupid I am as a person. Because, I don't know, I like to think I'm a functional adult. And then they're like, I wrote Gladiator times knowing I was wrong, but not caring enough. And like, I just kept it. And then to the point in my head, in my notes, I had to convince myself that like Greeks and gladiators and like all of that was the same thing.
I mean, they had things like gladiators, but gladiators, as you're imagining them when you wrote them in your notes, were largely a Roman invention.
I know that now. I knew that before you said it. I just in my writing completely forgot that fact and then just kept going, and then knowing the fact did not correct my notes. Oh, I'm so dumb. You find out how little I actually know.
But it is like the famous king, and they take and it does the thing that like I understand why they do it, because it'd be insane to do it any otherwise. It's a personal gripe I have is they take them to his city, which is like all old. When like, and I think like it's something, and it's to their credit, but Assassin's Creed Odyssey does this really well, where like it's set during the time period and everything's super colorful. Because, like, the Greeks and Romans painted everything. Like, it wasn't like how you go to, like, Washington, D.C., and it's, like, Roman-inspired, and it's all, like, the marble, I'm going to say, or granite, whatever these fucking buildings are made out of, but just the sheer stone. Most of the famous Greek buildings that we know of were, like, painted beautifully and colorfully. Like, the Greeks loved color. Like, the Parthenon was painted brightly. And I just think that, honestly, Terry Gilliam should have spent a lot of money and violated several, like, national heritage laws and painted these ruins for his movie.
Maybe build a set and paint it. Don't paint.
Nah, paint the building. Okay. It's what they would have wanted.
But no, Kevin is like, actually, I want to stay. I'm waiting for my friends.
I want my dad to be Sean Connery.
Yeah, and then Agamemnon goes away on his horse, and Kevin just sits there for like 2 seconds.
And he's like, "What? Actually, I want to stop. I want to come with you. I do.
Dad, look, I want to
come. Papa, don't leave me in this sticky wicket."
They walk through the city, and he throws the Minotaur head into the crowd, and they're all accepted to great applause. It's a cool scene. I don't even think that it's that long. I just felt
this scene flows because he goes and he's like, I wish I was in the Trojan War. And he's like, can you teach me to sword fight? And he's like, there's more important things than sword fighting here. And he does like a shitty magic trick.
He does. And then there's the banquet.
And he goes, a king shouldn't do things like that. But it's like a point they make where he's like, I can't believe you done this. After he kills the Minotaur, he's like, sometimes you have to kill. It's regrettable. He's like, no, you killed him really good. And there's a banquet. He's like, now this here.
Well, first he's kidnapped by a cult.
And then he's brought to the banquet. And he's like, now this here is my new son, you see? That's not what Sean Connery sounds like at all. And he's like, time for the banquet. I'm losing him. I'm losing Sean Connery.
As if you had him at all.
I am the man of 10,000 voices.
Okay,
so. And then this is where it stretches on, because like we sit through like the entire banquet.
Yes, there's the big beef muscle
big
man.
Big beefy guy who cuts a cow into fruit.
Yes, which is a magic trick, you see.
Dancing animals, dancing costume people.
Yes, and then we find out some of the dancing costume people are the bandits here to protect them, and Kevin does not want to go.
Kevin, he's like, don't take me, don't. And they're like, please, we need something from all the audience members, and they're giving them all their jewelry and gold. He's like, give me a crown, and they all go stand in the middle, and Randall keeps looking at a stopwatch. He's like, give me your son, he's like, no, don't let him take me, and he's like,
And then they escape through the time hole.
Yeah, because they lift up a curtain, and they vanish, and everyone's like, whoa, and then they don't come back.
Listen, here's to let you know how dumb I am. I put in parentheses in the later corrected my notes. They go to the Titanic. But instead of the Titanic, I wrote Gatsby-esque cruise, and it never fucking clicked. That could have been the most famous rich person boat from that time period.
I like that he wrote Gatsby-esque as just that's your way of saying rich 1920s event.
Yes. Well, yeah. Name me another one.
The Roaring Twenties.
Fair. But Pansy and Vince are back, and they are. We know it's Pansy. It's the same actors as Shelley Duvall and Michael Palin, obviously. But we know it's Pansy because he keeps saying Pansy. And then
he's like, I love the ocean. I love I love the ocean. It's so... And she goes with her big, pluckable eyes. What?
Yes. They're so horny. He's about to propose, and then all the bandits drop on him and reveal that it was a wig, and then Pansy runs away in fear. Yeah,
because she's okay with, like, the nose thing.
Yes, the weird...
But two weird things. So this is really a lesson for all of you, that you can find love...
No,
as long
no,
as you only have
no,
one
I'm cutting
weird
this,
physical
I'm not
thing.
Even kind of... No. So the bandits are just chilling, being rich people on the boat. And
yeah,
Kevin
they all got, like, haircuts, and they're all, like, smoking cigars. Really, honestly, quit smoking, but, like... Damn, I wanted. I'm gonna. If someone offers me a cigar, cigar isn't smoking. But like, just the just like that, the look of them puffing on cigars and drinking champagne. I'm like, I could go for a nice drinking cigar right now, you know?
Yeah.
And they're like, six more plates of caviar.
Yes, they're like, they're living life as a rich people.
She got filet mignon. Caviar is disgusting. It's overpriced. Ooh, it's expensive. Just get a nice filet mignon. Better meal.
But yeah, they sink and.
Yeah, so it turns out the Titanic. I love it because the boat, like, they're like, oh, well, we're gonna. Because he comes up and he's like, the boy's like, I hate all of you. You're all disgusting. You're all terrible people. And Randall comes up, not reading the room, and he's like, you and me are the same, kid. We like risk, and we're gonna risk it all for this thing Og saw. And then immediately the boat starts to sink, and they cut to, like, the shot of it, it's the Titanic.
Yeah, you can cut the entirety of the Titanic part.
You can.
Truly from entering the, I mean, I don't know exactly. But yes, they agree to start the quest. But like, you don't need that explicitly stated.
Anything that happens that needs to happen is so small a moment, you could stick it anywhere else.
Yes. Yes, I truly feel like you can cut from the time portal of Greece into the pirate ship of the ogre and giant. And the movie would be mostly unchanged.
Yeah.
That's probably the most the most frustrating part of the movie is that fucking swinging scene.
And we'll get to it.
Oh my God. So the evil creates a whirlpool. Are there any iconic lines in that moment?
I don't think so.
Okay. If we are forgetting any, please let us know. Two Men Movie.
Yeah, all of you have seen this movie and you remembered line, and all of you have seen the obscure movie Time Bandits. So be sure to correct us.
So they're dropped into a pirate ship.
Or right outside a pirate ship.
Yes, and there's, I wrote demon, we later find out as ogre. But yeah, a demon wakes up, an ogre wakes up, and he's like...
He's 30.
Yeah, honestly.
He's 30.
Dude.
His back hurts, and he has a bunch of health problems, and he just can't be young anymore.
Dude, a couple months ago, I threw my back out putting on a sock.
I climbed over the back of a booth and then had to like lay down because I pulled a muscle doing that.
Dude, I was standing and I lifted one foot to like do the sock, you know how you're supposed to?
Yeah.
And then my back twitched and I slammed on the floor.
Yeah, like it's, what we're saying is we understand, his name's Winston.
Yes.
We understand you, Winston. You're seen and heard and loved.
Because
I too wake up every morning like, oh my God, I got 1 hour of sleep and my back hurts.
Yeah.
I don't even have a weird witch wife to help me.
Yes, he has. He has his loving witch wife who's like there to heal all his ailments, like you said.
Give him his medicines.
Yes. And they hear the bandits. He hears the bandits in the background kind of screaming for help. And the wife is like, there is nothing going on.
It's your nerves, honey.
Exactly. So he goes out for fishing. And then,
but he's fishing for trash because he's like, all you do is catch fish. And I just want a good old boot. It's my diet that's ruining me. Anti-pollution bullshit.
But he throws the fishing net out and he catches the bandits.
Like the political stance of this movie is technology is bad. Business is good. Anti-pollution is bad.
And God rules over all.
Well, obviously.
Well, not every movie explicitly states it like this movie does.
I challenge you to show me one movie that doesn't have God in it.
I mean, God is everywhere.
He's everywhere. Everything. He created everything in 7 days.
7 literal days, y'all. It's not a fucking metaphor in the slightest.
It's not a metaphor. He's God.
Okay. So
he invented the week. He chose the day Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
So he's trying.
You think God hates Mondays? Do you think he wakes up like, oh, fuck. He really likes Garfield, I bet.
Okay. Where the fuck are we? I hate this.
This movie's hard to follow.
It's not. Everything leads into each other.
I know, but I'm saying, like, it's hard to follow as, like, a bit-by-bit plot adventure because so much of it is just vaporous.
It very much feels like a collection of, like, 6 segments as opposed to one.
Yeah, it's just, like, weird bits because they go on the ship and then they crack his back and they throw him in the water and they steal the ship, but then the ship's a hat.
Yeah, the ship is the hat of a giant.
For some reason.
Yeah.
You could cut that entire thing. It's completely unneeded.
1,000%. 1,000%.
They show him walking, this giant walking around for like 5 minutes before anything happens.
Do you think the first SpongeBob movie was inspired with David Hasselhoff in this scene?
There's no way this movie was like, someone's like, ah, inspiration.
So the ship is a hat. The giant crushes a house. The bandits try to escape. Kevin pours.
I love that you're hitting every single thing that happens so clearly, but it sounds like you can't remember the movie. He has in fact described the scene perfectly. The boat is a hat, and the giant crushes a house. This is a 10-minute scene. He has hit every part of the scene. He has been so in-depth on this.
Yes. I break down every plot point.
And it just sounds like you don't know what you're talking about. You got the giant has a boat for a hat. He steps in a house. That's all that happens in 5 minutes.
So Kevin and the dwarves are, first they take off the floorboards and the dwarves are trying to kick the giant's head and it does nothing. So Kevin pours,
sleeping potion. He like punctures his scalp with sleeping potion.
Yeah. And then the giant falls asleep and they're all able to escape. Then they start wandering the desert metaphorically. It's more of an island than an actual desert. I don't remember the geographically.
Deserts can be on islands. Sure. You have a desert island.
Sure, but it's not like desert in the same way that it was.
All it needs to be a desert is a certain amount of lack of rainfall, really. Antarctica's a desert.
Hell yeah. Honestly, then fine. They're wandering the desert. As they're wandering, they're getting real annoyed, and then they hit a force field.
Yeah, they hit a force field, which is clearly a plane of glass.
Just fucking.
There's like smudges on it.
But yeah, so the bandit. They find out through the map that on the other side is the Fortress of Ultimate Darkness. Yeah. And the bandits, a bunch of the bandits, sans Randall, are trying to mutinize Randall for no reason. For no reason. It comes out of goddamn nowhere.
They just think it's dumb.
Yes, and then Randall's like, I'm the leader, but I thought we had no leaders. I'm the leader. Y'all are going to miss me. And then he takes a skull that just happens to be there.
He's going to murder one of his friends with.
But they duck.
And then it
shatters.
None of them thought to hit this thing beforehand.
But yeah, it's revealed the castle.
That it's a facade.
Yes, and then they enter the castle, and it's the Moderna Designs and game show from the opening. That's when you find out that everything. All of the evil is technology, and the devil is using technology.
And that the ultimate treasure is the advanced kitchen set mentioned earlier.
Yes. He tricks the bandits into giving him the map, which they just give it up so easily.
They want the kitchen set.
Yeah, I know.
Some people like to cook.
Yeah. Okay? Cooking's cool.
Don't shame them for that.
I'm not. But they're fucking captured I wrote in quotes Minotaur because they're not Minotaurs, but they're like the skull.
Yeah, they're like haunting creatures.
Yes. then they're locked in this cage, and the bandits are lamenting their capture, as we all know. Kevin just peruses his photos, and he finds the one, oh, fucking earlier. I don't remember when. I'm not checking my notes. Earlier, they took
a group picture.
Yeah, and they showed the map, and they're like, "Oh, there's the world's biggest time hole right beneath us." And then
men are always just looking for that big time hole.
Absolutely. Not Wally. Vermin climbs the thing, starts chopping at the rope.
This fucking scene.
Oh my god. Okay. Yes, this scene could have been 90 seconds. It's like 6 minutes.
They're doing like this acrobatic thing to escape the cage, and they literally show you every second of it.
Every false swing. Listen, it's not even that it's a bad scene. It's a well-executed scene. It's just that this scene to me is a shining example of my glaring issues with this movie, is that it executes what it's doing very well.
Like, nothing's bad. Nothing we see is bad. There's just
too
much of it.
Right. So, they're swinging from cage to cage. They swing to, I think, 3 cages. But they're doing, like, the loop-de-loop thing. The, like, loop-de-cage where it's, like, one dwarf swings over to one cage. I think Strutter is the first one to swing. Yeah. And then Wally swings over to the other cage, and then Strutter swings over to the end, and they create a zip line.
It takes like 7 minutes.
Dude. And then Wally falls because it snapped.
The original cage.
Because they were cutting the ropes to like make the big rope. And finally it snaps and Wally falls. And at no point was I ever actually concerned that he was dead.
Yeah, they just pull him back up.
Truly.
And then
there was no stakes.
There is very little stakes.
Were you supposed to think that he was dead?
I think so.
Well, they did not work. Never for a second did I think that anything bad was actually going to happen to them in this scene.
Foolish. They could have died at any moment. It's incredibly risky.
Their stakes is the wrong term, I guess. Tension is also the wrong term.
We have absolutely no tension in the movie until this point.
Correct. Where
the kid goes, they're like, oh, fuck, oh, Jesus Christ, let's get to the time we'll get out of here. And they're like, well, we can't do what evil's got the map. He does, he'll destroy the world. And they go, oh, yeah.
Yeah, just fuck it. Let's
no fucking argument from them. They're like, yeah, we can leave. He goes, here, they'll destroy the world. And they go, oh, yeah.
Yeah, and then Evil turns Benson into a dog in the next scene.
Yeah, he says a line, I'm sorry, Benson, but I'm going to have to turn you into a dog now.
The bandits sneak into the lair, and Evil and his team ignore Benson.
Because he's learning about, like, arcade machines and computers.
Yes, and the dog is barking, and Evil's like, shut up, Benson, even though he's barking.
Your entire job is to bark when something happens.
And then they steal the map, and they're discovered in which one? Og is turned into a half pig.
As I like to call him, a cop in training.
Hey! But yeah, so he's turned into a half pig. This is the things that happen. And in the movie, they sort of make sense. There are more bits. There are things in this movie.
The audience can't see my skeptical face I'm making.
I'm gonna preface that. I like this movie.
Yeah, it's good. All the things that happen are good, but they just, from this point on, they just happen.
Yes, sometimes they're bits, and sometimes they're plot points, and sometimes they're a weird combo of the two. I think this is one of those that is a weird combo of the two.
There needed to be a draft 4 and 5 of this movie. This is a 3-draft movie. Rough draft, second draft, first draft, and then, like, I spell checked it.
Sure. They chase. They're being chased around the castle. They find the portal, and then Kevin's like, I have a plan, but I need one of you to stay. And then Og, the half pig, decides to stay.
Well, he doesn't decide to stay. Randall says, good job on you, Og, and just pushes him.
Sure.
Yeah, like he can't say no because he's a pig. So they just push him forward and said, you'll be the one. He says, go get some help.
But yeah, they go to confront evil in the main lair.
He has all his monsters, all his henchmen, and he's like, do come in, call them off, or they'll burn the map. I will.
Yes, evil just like destroys all of his team.
Destroy, and they're like, thank you.
And then he turns Og into a full pig.
And while the kid's distracted, he takes back the map.
Yes. And then the bandits show up again. It felt
like, you know, like an Endgame.
Yes.
The greatest movie ever made.
Okay. Really?
No.
Okay.
It's fine. It's a good movie. It's where the MCU should have ended. But like, it's the big payoff where like everyone that like this 20 years of movies have led up, not 20, 15 years of movies have led up to show up. And it's a bah, 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 bah. And it's a big climatic moment. You're like, oh, look, it's Black Panther. Oh, look, it's all these people, all the people we've met and formed connections with this entire movie. Except it's just a bunch of people that, like, we spent no time with. And furthermore, neither did the characters. They just stole from them, then ran.
Yeah.
But it's like, oh, it's the Greeks. Oh, it's the cowboys, which you say appeared. I do not remember there being a cowboy. There's not a cowboy. I swear to God.
I believe you now. I genuinely thought in my head. I wrote down that the bandits' garbs looked like cowboy garbs. In my head, I thought like it was a.
So there's people we haven't even met. There's like a tank. There's cowboys. There's like a super spaceship from the future. And it's like, it feels like it's supposed to be a payoff, but there's nothing. This is the only actual criticism I have with the movie. Like I actually dislike the moment because it feels like it's supposed to be emotional payoff. Like it's the end of like Ted and Bill's adventure. It's like, all our friends from history are here to help us. But they never form these relationships. The bandits spend like no time with anyone except Napoleon for a bit. And then they just steal from them and run away. They haven't formed these connections.
No, true. No, I'm on your side. I don't remember everything I said while we were watching it, but I got a lot of my feelings out while we were watching it.
It feels,
which is bad podcasting.
It feels like the end of a typical of this time, like children's adventure movie, where through the power of friendship, the day is saved. But there is no friendship. They just stole from them, then ran away. And I don't care if someone stole like my wallet, then came back and was like, I need your help to fight evil. I'd say no, give me back my fucking wallet.
Also, I understand Sean Connery comes back as the fire chief, spoiler alert.
Doesn't show up here. None of the characters we actually spent time with show up.
I think I mentioned that. That's the thing that annoys me the most, is that it's none of the actual people.
It's only the Greeks are the only people we've seen before at all. I guess the Knights.
But they were the Monty Python people, but like,
yeah.
Were they specific? No. I don't think they were specifically mentioned.
None of the characters we see are actually specific characters we've seen before.
That's the thing. Yes, that's the most annoying part of this. Also, a tank and a laser gun rocket spaceship for no goddamn reason. I get it that they went to other times and like brought, but those feel like scenes that were cut.
See, that makes it would make more sense to me if they showed up, like one showed up in a tank, one showed up in a spaceship. Because that means they just stole things.
Yeah.
But like, that makes sense to me in the character arc. Because I went back and stole a tank. I stole a spaceship. But it's like, here's all our friends we never made.
But yeah. So let's get to this scene, I guess. The cowboys, the Hogtie, Evil, who just fucking lets them.
Because
you later find
out. Great acting where it's like, he literally cannot be bothered. He's annoyed. He's vaguely annoyed in the way that you get annoyed when something hits your face.
Yeah. Like, this is a game to him.
Yeah. And then he spins while circus music plays and a knife thing designed by Geiger comes out of his head. And then the Greeks shoot him, but he turns into a giant balloon and shoots them back and kills them. And then they start shooting him with ray guns and tank things, and he takes control of it, which has one of my favorite lines in the movie, where Randall goes, I can't control it. And he goes, of course you can't control it, you silly little man. I'm controlling it.
They're losing so... I love...
It's a slaughter. Like, one of the characters legitimately dies.
Yeah, he gets... fuck it, which one? Which one? Don't tell me. Don't... oh, my God. Which one? Oh, my God.
Bold of you to assume I could tell you.
But they fucking... Oh, my God. Is it not... It is... Is it... It is... It is... It is... Fidget! Fucking... It crushes Fidget. Yeah, they fucking crush Fidget. They fucking Wicked Witch of the West... No, yeah, Wicked Witch of the East him.
They legitimately kill Fidget.
Dude, they fucking kill...
Like, the guy feels his legs out. For, like, a pulse. He's like, yes. He's fucking dead.
They fucking...
And then the one guy's like, oh, I'm gonna fight, evil I am. And then he goes to fight.
Molly, yeah.
Yeah, he goes out to fight. That's not how he sounds like. He's like, I'm gonna kill him! The kid sounds like that. And then, like, the evil's about to destroy them, and he just turns to stone and dies. And this is where
literal
we get
Deus Ex Machina.
To my favorite part of the film, because God shows up, and he's an elderly British gentleman in the J.R.R. Tolkien thing, where he's like, well, I say, this is quite the mess. And it's revealed that all of this has just been a test of his creation of evil. When pressed, why did you do this? Why does there need to be evil? He says, it's something about free will or some bollocks like that. And God is just portrayed as the completely unloving, uncaring, strict, disciplined father that he is in the Catholic faith. This is why I think it's a Catholic film. This is why I think whoever designed this was raised Catholic. Because this is how Catholics view God. He does not care. He cares in just enough of a way that he is like, I birthed you. Or I shot my load in someone, they birthed you. Like that strict, distant father. He has no redeemable figures. Like, well, shouldn't we do something for the boy? He's like, what? No, this isn't a school trip. Fuck the boy.
Dude, this is a moment where I wish I knew more about Monty Python history. I know Terry Gilliam is like a staunch atheist, and John Cleese is also. I assume they all are, but I don't know if they were raised Catholic. But
they have to be.
Truly would make so much sense. But yeah, like you said,
because it is such an uncaring father.
Yeah, he orders them. He transfers them to the back growth department.
Undergrowth.
It's undergrowth?
Yeah, like bushes and shrubs.
Okay. Sorry, I wrote back growth. I must have mixed two lines.
Now, back growth is what the Polish have.
So he transfers them to the back growth department or the undergrowth department with a 19% salary back pay. Starting at the beginning of time.
Yeah, which is what are they paid in? Like, there's this concept of money I don't think should exist.
No, and then they fucking he's all about to leave, and the bandits are like, yo, can Kevin come? He's our friend. And God's like, no, this isn't a silly school trip.
Yeah, fuck this kid. And he goes, wait, don't leave me at the end of time. And then, but then like the smoke builds up because they were told to collect all the pieces of evil because it's dangerous, but they miss a piece and it starts smoldering underneath the tank. But then he wakes up and his entire house is on fire. And the firemen come in. And they rescue him and they take him outside. And his parents are like, Korma, but the toaster. Oh, fuck my, the toaster's in there. And then the fireman's like, are you all right?
Yes, and the fireman is Sean Connery.
He's looking at his pictures. He's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. He's making that face. He's looking at the pictures like, whoa, it all really happened. And then he's like, this caused the problem, this toaster. And they open it up and there's a piece of evil in it. And I'm going at a brisk pace because it's the only part of the movie that is brisk. And he goes, don't touch that, Mom and Dad. That's evil. And they touch on his parents fucking explode. And then he's like, oh, Mom, Dad. And then the Greek king fireman looks at him, winks for some fucking reason, and drives off. And that's the end of the movie.
So,
unpack that one.
I'm just gonna very quick. The winking means in the universe of the movie, he is Agamemnon, or at least has some recollection of Agamemnon.
Yeah, like, but it's being... like a cheerful wink, like, haha, don't tell anybody. And that's not what you do after
like
you
went through a time hole, yeah.
After his parents explode. his parents just, he does the wink after the kid's parents explode.
Just fucking leaves him. And then Kevin's just there alone.
Staring at their smoldering shoes.
And then it does the fucking zoom out shot of the neighborhood, then the country, yeah, then the world. Yeah, the
Men in Black zoom out shot.
Yeah. And then it turns into the map and then the title credits, Time Bandits. You're right. That is the only part of that movie that is like steady, fast pace. And I get that's probably on purpose because fires move, everything moves too fast. But like,
but they really, God shows up, is an asshole. And then the kid leaves his adventure worse than where he started. Like, not even like worse in like an apocalyptic way. Just now his house burned down and his parents are dead.
I talk a lot about the next 15 minutes of movie, which this is an interesting movie to talk about it with, because I don't know how the next 15 minutes would be paced. And I don't know.
He has all the emergency service drive off. His parents blow up while they're there and then they leave.
Yeah.
The next 15 minutes is the neighbors calling the police while he sits next to the smoldering shoes of his parents.
And that's probably the entire 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's all the neighbors sitting. And
he gained nothing from this adventure. Half the time he was mad.
I mean, yeah, he gained friends that he can't see. He gained a father figure that isn't there.
Just winked after his father died and drove off. He doesn't even get the payoff of like, I'll take you under my hand, son. You wanted to live with me. Now you can. But now I'm a firefighter.
Do you think he tries the time hole in his room again?
How? It's his room's gone.
Where his room was? Do you think he like...
No, I don't think you can open that anymore. I think it's destroyed. I think we've moved...
Because
time holes aren't there all the time. They're just there at certain points of time. I think we moved past the point of time.
Okay, so time... Okay, so...
I don't think he has any grand adventures after this. I think he has nothing. I think he spends the rest of his formative years in foster care, in like a boarding house of some kind. Not boarding house, they have a different term there, but like a foster home or like an orphanage. He becomes a little orphanage. Like, can I have some more, sir? And then he goes on to live like a deeply unsettling life where he's just kind of realizing that he's missing something and he's like doesn't have it. Like he knows how things work, but he's forced to be like an accountant of some sort until he meets like a really cool guy and he's like, hey, like listen, man, the system's fucked, why don't you join up with me? And so he joins like his fight club, and then like he kind of joins this fight club thing, and then he meets like this girl and she's pretty cool, right? But then he discovers that like they're gonna like bomb all the credit buildings to free everyone from debt. And he goes like, oh, God, that's bad. But then he finds out that really the guy in charge of the fight club is him. And so he, like, stabs him, killing him metaphorically. And then he watches as, like, the Big Ben collapses. Well, like, Where's My Mind plays. And he's like, he says something like, I don't know, like, you've met me at a strange point in my life. Which is weird for him to say, because arguably the strangest point in his life was when a bunch of dwarves were taking him across all of creation.
For a movie that is all about childhood whimsy, it really ends on a fucking downer for no real goddamn reason. Yeah,
he's in an orphanage now. That's the ending of this movie. He gets nothing. He literally has nothing. He doesn't even have happy... The Navigator ends with nothing gained, but he still has the whole thing of like, see you later, alligator. Like, it's a fun ending. His parents just blow up. His parents
out of nowhere too. It's set up. There's the one shot of the evil.
He says, "Don't touch that." And they both look at him, then both touch it at the same time, and they blow up.
I said earlier that I feel like this movie feels like disconnected segments, and I feel like that's the end, and it should go into another segment, but it
he's an orphan without a home now, no inheritance.
This movie is very whimsical and enjoyable.
It's whimsical in the front, but deep underneath is the tale of an uncaring god, and the entire conflict is made out is just because he wanted to experiment with creating pure evil. He even says, they're like, sorry for stealing the map. And he's like, you didn't steal it. I let you have it because I was doing an experiment about evil. All the struggles, all the people that die in this movie are because God just wanted to do a little experiment about evil.
But, is it really an experiment if he knew what he was going to do? I get that that's also a question of, like, predestination, blah, blah, blah.
He said, I wanted to see, this was a good turnout. This was a good experiment. This was a good conclusion.
Yeah, but he
went into it just kind of seeing, I don't know what's going to happen.
Okay, fair enough. any...
Because, in this movie, he's all powerful, clearly not all knowing, because he didn't know what would happen with the experiment. And therefore, according to Lex Luthor in the hit movie Batman vs. Superman, he cannot be all good, and he's not.
No, he's just a fucking British asshole.
He's a piece of shit.
Oh my God.
This movie hates God.
I mean, yeah.
And that's why it's Catholic.
It's a Terry... Yeah, honestly, it's a Terry Gilliam movie. It's... The fact that this movie is so Catholic and the fact that Monty Python made Life of Brian a fucking... They have to have been.
One of them.
Oh, at least.
One of them has to have been and never shut up talking about it. But like, yeah, it's a good... I would give this movie, I don't know, probably 5 out of 5?
You give it 5 stars on Letterboxd?
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with this movie.
I gave it 3 stars the first time and 2.5 the second time.
Whoa. Wow, didn't you like this movie?
I did.
I don't think I would ever give something I like below 3.
Interesting. Okay. I mean, if we're using 2.5 is 5 on a 1 to 10 scale.
If you said I like that,
the,
if I like that Uber
average?
Driver, but there are some problems, do you give him 2.5?
No, but their livelihood depends on it. I'm not judging. I'd give him fucking 5 stars because his livelihood depends on it. This is a different situation, Matthew.
I don't know.
Anyway, I liked this movie. I have fundamental problems with this movie.
I had fun watching it. Watching it has made me more tired.
Yes, I did not have as many problems with this movie on the first watch, and then the second watch really hammered
home. If I didn't
have
to watch it for the podcast, I was just watching this movie, I would have taken a nap halfway through.
You paused to take a nap?
No, it would have kept playing.
Okay. Oh, yeah, you fucking do take 20-minute naps. Like, yeah. How? Any final thoughts?
Yeah. So, like, I think that this movie truly conveys that, there is no loving God. Nothing in life really matters, and we're all playing just... We're all just the whimsy of an absentee toy maker. And that really, free will's kind of an illusion. There's no destiny. There's no real hope. And some days your parents will just explode and there'll be smoldering shoes and there's nothing you could have done to prevent that. There's nothing in your power you could have done to stop that from happening. And you just have to accept that you have no control over your life and you're just an actor going through the movements on a stage.
Minus the God shit, I had a very similar takeaway to another movie that I'm going to recommend for this that we'll watch someday, Watership Down.
I love me a nihilist movie.
Yeah. No, it's truly... I had a very similar takeaway to Watership Down. I also have the same takeaway for this, but less lengthy.
Less rabbits.
Yeah. Have you seen Watership Down?
I know it's a very sad rabbit movie.
Okay, cool. We are going to watch it
then. I know
it's
traumatized children.
Yes, do not watch it before the pod.
Then depend... Not a worry. Still haven't caught up in Fallout.
Nice. All right. Thank you to... final thoughts. Good movie. Liked it. Thank you. First off, thank you to Tristan Hostetter for our theme song. So you can find us at social medias. Matthew knows all of those.
I know all of them but the Twitter because I just can't be asked to give a shit about fucking Twitter. Two Men Movie Podcast on Instagram, twomenmovie@gmail.com. If you want to email us, we also have Facebooks that are Two Men Movie, but really that's just so you can find us. I don't know why you'd go there. Go to Instagram. That's where everything's going to be. You can find me at Midwest.
Magician?
Fuck, I forgot to update it.
Midwest Magician?
No, I was going to post. I should have posted something there.
Oh, yeah.
But I didn't. God damn it, I have to do that after the show. Midwest underscore magician, which will now have a new thing, which I just remembered. I forgot to post. It's not exciting. Where can they find you, Harry?
This is Editing Harrison saying that you can follow me on Instagram and TikTok at harrisonpoole.com. That's P-O-O-L-E, harrisonpoole.com. This has been Time Bandits 2 Minute in a Movie podcast. Check out next week where we are watching Jennifer's Body.
I know in that this movie, Megan Fox acts.
Yeah, I love this movie. We're watching the unrated extended cut because it's very minor differences.
So we can see some of that tit and ass, am I right, fellas?
No, but they're only,
hey.
There are only minor differences.
However, I'm one of the people in the movie she kills.
There are only minor differences between the two cuts. We'll also talk about that next week. However, it's the only watchable version of that movie. Anyway.
Interesting. All right.
This has been 2 Men in a Movie podcast.
Love and kisses. If you hold your phone up, if you're on your phone, hold it up right now to your ear. It's like I'm giving you little kisses.
Thank you for listening, Matthew.
We're all so physically touch-starved as a society.
All right, I'm cutting the record. I love you very much.
I love you too, baby.
This is Matthew and Harrison's 2 Men in a Movie. It's not what it sounds like.